from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. Good morning. I'm Lily Jamali. Today, we're going to get the latest on the Kavanaugh nomination. We'll get a glimpse into problems with border wall prototypes, and we'll hear co-host John Sepulveda's interview with John Cox. He's the Republican running for California governor. I'm joined today in the studio by California Report assignment editor Polly Stryker. Polly, thanks for being here this morning.
Good morning.
We're going to start things off on the podcast with a story of Stephon Clark. Tuesday marked 6 months since Sacramento police shot and killed him. He was just 22 years old. Remind us what happened to Stephon Clark.
So back in March, in Sacramento, in a neighborhood, there was a disturbance outside and a neighbor called the police. And, you know, we got footage from body cams and also from a sheriff's helicopter. And we were able to watch it pretty soon thereafter because they released it quickly. Basically, he was chased by police. So the police turned up, started asking questions, and he was chased. And you see him running into his backyard, what turned out to be his grandparents' backyard. Mm-hmm. And then there's a hail of gunfire, and he went down. And he was shot at, I think, 10 times, but hit 8 times. And he died. He died a few minutes later. And all he was holding, he did hold something up in the air, but it was a cell phone.
Right.
Turned out to be a cell phone.
And we only learned that later. This footage is powerful and heartbreaking. Now his family is vowing that he will not be forgotten. Let's listen to KQED's Katie Orr, who was at a rally remembering him yesterday.
Clark's family, including his mother, grandmother, and brother, marked the anniversary of his death by calling on police to take responsibility for the shooting. They joined dozens of protesters who gathered in front of a law enforcement convention in downtown Sacramento. Clark's brother, Stevante Clark, said these past few months have been hell for him and his family.
I'm here to promote accountability on the officers, on the sheriffs, on the city of Sacramento. And it hurts. It hurts that this is happening in the heart of California.
Protesters staged a die-in, lying in nylon coffins in the street in front of the city's convention center. Police wearing helmets and visors prepared to remove them. The protesters eventually began marching through downtown. The Reverend Al Sharpton will be in Sacramento today to call on law enforcement to expedite an internal investigation into Clark's death. That investigation is ongoing, and no charges have been filed. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
In case you missed it, California Senator Dianne Feinstein has been all over Twitter last night and this morning. As the ranking member of the committee vetting Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, Feinstein's been vocal about the need to hear out Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, who's accusing Kavanaugh of sexual assault. Feinstein says the California professor is now getting death threats and has been forced to flee her home. Lawrence Hurley has been watching things unfold in Washington, where he covers the Supreme Court for Reuters. Lawrence, good morning.
Good morning.
So we've been hearing that Dr. Ford would appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday. Now her lawyers are saying an FBI investigation should be the first step. Does this seem likely to derail this nomination?
Well, I think at the moment it's too early to say exactly what's going to happen. There's a lot of back and forth between the Republicans and the Democrats on this issue of whether there should be some kind of FBI investigation, with the Republicans saying, you know, this is unprecedented. But the Democrats point out that there was a FBI investigation back in 1991 when Clarence Thomas faced similar allegations, and that was done quite quickly.
U.S. President Donald Trump is saying this morning that Feinstein and the Democrats should have come forward with this claim sooner. Senator Feinstein is tweeting that Dr. Ford requested confidentiality. She honored that, and it was the media that outed her.
Yeah, I think this whole thing has put Senator Feinstein in a kind of tricky spot because, as we know, she heard about these allegations back in July. Didn't raise them at all with either the Republicans or with the nominee when they had the confirmation hearing. You know, the whole thing has kind of spiraled out of control a little bit. And it's sort of unclear how this was originally planned to be handled.
Lawrence Hurley covers the Supreme Court for Reuters. Lawrence, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
About a year ago, KQED first exposed a scandal in San Joaquin County. The medical examiner there at the time was accusing the then sheriff of meddling in investigations to protect law enforcement. The sheriff there is also the coroner. Well, the reporting sparked a measure that would have changed how deaths involving officers are investigated. Well, Governor Brown just vetoed that bill. Here's KQED's Julie Small.
In most counties in California, a coroner, who is also the elected sheriff, investigates sudden, violent, or suspicious deaths and deaths that happen during arrest or in custody. Senator Richard Pan says that puts sheriffs in charge of the physicians conducting the autopsies.
And because of that, they can influence the findings of the autopsy. They can even modify the reports.
In San Joaquin County last year, the chief forensic pathologist accused the sheriff coroner of overriding autopsy findings in several officer-involved deaths. The pathologist believed officers caused those deaths, but the sheriff labeled them accidents. In response to the scandal, Pan introduced a bill that would have forced several counties, including San Joaquin, to replace the sheriff coroner with an independent medical examiner. But in his veto message, Governor Brown said local officials are in the best position to decide how deaths should be investigated. Pan questions that reasoning.
Sheriffs also have tremendous political power in counties, and that's why many counties have been very slow to address this issue.
In San Joaquin County, supervisors voted to strip the sheriff of his coroner duties and appoint a medical examiner. The sheriff later lost his reelection bid. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small.
In Fresno this week, city council members took questions from the public about potential new rules on how medicinal cannabis businesses would operate there. The California Report's Alex Hall found two groups on very different sides of this issue, marijuana entrepreneurs and concerned parents. I'm going to bring in Polly Stryker, who worked closely with Alex on this story. You know, we think of recreational cannabis as being legal in California, thinking, okay, it's across the state, we are all done now. But this is actually a great example of yet another city going through the regulatory process.
Yeah, many cities and counties either have banned or they don't have regulations. They're still trying to figure it out. I mean, medicinal cannabis has been legal for more than 20 years, but the sale of recreational cannabis only became legal at the beginning of this year.
And talk me through the process that you and Alex went through, because she went to this meeting and didn't necessarily know what angle she was going to take.
Well, I think the meeting mirrors concerns in many cities and counties across the state. I said, well, who was there? And she said, well, there were some mad moms and some pot entrepreneurs. And, you know, with really valid concerns on both sides and reflecting communities' concerns about having storefronts, maybe close to schools. I can tell you that my son's school has a pot shop right next door here in San Francisco. So, you know, these are things to think about truly in different cities. And it was reflected in that meeting.
Let's take a listen to what Alex brought back from this meeting, and we'll talk on the other side.
The more that I read this ordinance, this doesn't look like it's about medical marijuana at all. This looks like it's about big marijuana coming into our city.
I'm just a small business owner, and I know how to go to the city and ask for business licenses, and when's it going to make any sense?
Fresno City Council members listened carefully and answered questions for an hour and a half. Prop 64 legalized the sale of recreational marijuana statewide, but it also gave cities and counties the right to ban sales at the local level. The city of Fresno had done so until now.
We owe it to everyone to get this right.
That's City Councilman Clint Olivier. To allay concerns, Olivier and others worked with a consultant to draft regulations.
What we were told is that to get this right, there has to be a conservative and slow rollout. If you read about the situation in Los Angeles, if you read about the situation in San Diego, those cities are having a really, really difficult time with this.
The proposed rules include putting a cap on the number of dispensaries allowed, 7 to start, and setting up special cannabis innovation hubs, or industrial areas of up to 100 acres where businesses could run. The public comment period extends into the fall, but nothing gets settled until voters consider a measure on the November ballot to tax marijuana businesses. For the California Report, I'm Alex Hall in Fresno.
And Polly, all of this could be made moot by home delivery, right?
Yeah, I mean, many cities and counties allow home delivery right now. It's like ordering a pizza. You can order cannabis delivered to your home, recreational or medicinal. The State Bureau of Cannabis Control is rewriting some regulations now that, they've rewritten some draft regulations and they're going to consider them this fall that would allow delivery anywhere in the state. So even in counties or cities that don't want cannabis storefronts could have home delivery. So that will probably play out in the courts. It's not yet resolved, but this is very much a new frontier and it's ongoing how to regulate this stuff.
Polly is a very, very busy woman. And so I am that much more grateful that you agreed to stick around with me this morning. Thanks.
Oh, this was so much fun. Thank you very much.
I'm going to let you go, but there's still a whole lot more podcast left. We heard earlier this week from Democratic candidate for Governor Gavin Newsom. He spoke about housing and the economy. We wanted to hear from Republican candidate John Cox on those same topics. Cox is a businessman from San Diego, and he spoke to our co-host John Sepulveda by phone. Here's that conversation.
Mr. Cox, welcome to the California Report.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
What is your plan to increase housing affordability and reduce homelessness?
Okay, well, the first thing that we have to do is build a lot more homes, but we have to also make sure that they're built affordably. I'm in the housing business. I can build beautiful apartments in other states for $80,000 a unit. The same ones would cost $300,000 in Fresno, $500,000 in San Diego, and $700,000 in the Bay Area.
What do you think about this proposal that's been floated in the Bay Area and Sacramento, San Diego, of rent control for the folks who, because it's going to take a while for...
Exactly the opposite of what we ought to be doing. If you want more investment and you want more building to be done, you got to make it so that people are incentivized. And if you put limits on rents, you're A, not going to get new apartments built, and secondly, you're not going to get old apartments rehabbed or improved in any fashion.
One of the other things that we're seeing is that you and other Republicans in the state are running into the headwinds of a very strong anti-President Trump feeling in the state. And a lot of it has to do with things like the family separation policy, the immigration policy. Did you support the family separation policy? And are you happy with President Trump's immigration policy?
I'm not happy about separating families. I want more immigration to this country and to our state. We need workers in this state. We've got a lot of businesses in this state that are literally dying for workers. So we need to have more immigration. It's got to be legal, and we've got to know who's coming into our state, into our country. So I'm all for making sure that we have it controlled and that we have people that we know who are here.
Just very briefly, how do you make the argument that on one hand, Democrats have driven the state to the brink of economic ruin, and on the other hand, acknowledge that we need workers? It seems like
You said economic ruin. I said the state's unaffordable. And yes, everybody has a job in the state. We need workers. The trouble is that people are working two and three jobs in order to make a living or to make a go of it in the state. The electricity rates are twice what they are in other states. And the legislature just passed a law going to 100% renewable energy, which sounds absolutely wonderful, but it's going to be done on the backs of working people who are going to see their electricity bills absolutely double. I mean, the politicians are just keep driving the middle class into poverty.
John Cox joining us by phone. Mr. Cox, good luck.
Yeah, appreciate it.
We want more immigration. That is the quote I just heard from a Republican candidate. But hey, it is, after all, California. Let's head to San Diego now, where KPBS investigative reporter Jean Guerrero has been following progress on President Trump's proposed border wall. Jean got her hands on a government report, heavily redacted, but one that nonetheless reveals some big flaws with prototypes that the government is considering for the wall. I spoke with Jean about her reporting.
We learned that all of the mock-ups of the prototypes were deemed vulnerable to one of the breaching techniques. We don't know what that breaching technique was because the documents were so heavily redacted. But what's interesting is that it apparently took the testing teams by surprise. They were testing a mock-up with one of these techniques and found that it was so damaged, they decided to move that technique to the end of each test for the other mock-ups.
And that is in conflict with previous reporting that we've seen about these prototypes.
Right. So there was a lot of buzz early this year after the testing took place. A lot of headlines using words like virtually impassable, nearly indestructible. And all of those stories were quoting anonymous officials within the administration who said that they'd viewed the results of the testing and found that the prototypes and mock-ups stood up to these tests. But the documents show that that's really not the case.
That was KPBS investigative reporter Jean Guerrero. My thanks to Jean. Today marks 1 year since a 7.1 magnitude earthquake shook Mexico City. More than 350 people died and several buildings collapsed. Scared residents WhatsApped with family and friends here in California looking for comfort. Wesley Boxey lost his wife, Elizabeth Esquerra Rosas, in the quake. From Mexico City, reporter Emily Green brings us this update.
After 2 months in the hospital, Wesley Boxey moved to Livermore, California, 45 miles east of San Francisco, to live with his sister and to recover from injuries he sustained when his apartment building collapsed. It took 5 months for him to walk again. He visited Mexico City this summer for the first time since the earthquake.
Around every corner, there's a great memory of something that I did with my wife, and 20 years of living there with her. It's difficult to forget, and being there, it just makes it more acute.
Wesley is now raising their 6-year-old daughter in the U.S., although he still has a large community of family and friends in Mexico. For the California Report, I'm Emily Green in Mexico City.
Support for the California Report comes from Personal Capital, providing customers a real-time dashboard view into all of their financial accounts with insight-driven wealth advisory services. PersonalCapital.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And Supermicro, a Silicon Valley IT solutions company with an emphasis on energy-efficient computing. Engineering and sales positions are available. Learn more at supermicro.com.
And that's the California Report podcast for this Wednesday, September 19th. We are a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Lily Jamali. Have a great day.